cliffcentral.com.
Richard, are we on track with the financial pack for my presentation to the board next week?
Well, hopefully. The team's very short-staffed, and it's taking such a long time to find a suitable financial manager for the division. We're way behind on all our forecasts and reporting.
Why don't you speak to the finance team? They're a consultancy that can help you with an experienced interim financial manager. You can have somebody to help you almost immediately. They'll hit the ground running with no long-term contracts and no upfront placement fees.
Go to thefinanceteam.co.za.
Welcome to our Business Masterclass. I'm Richard Angus, CEO of the finance team, your part-time financial executive solution. Joining me in studio now as part of our panel is Safia Bolle of New Habits. Welcome, Safia.
Hello, everybody.
Nice to have you with us.
Thank you.
In the first half hour of the show, we're going to be having a business skills conversation. Last week, we chatted with Colleen Lightbody from USB Ed about the topic of growing your business and whether you should acquire your competitors, a great podcast. Download that from our website. Today's theme, we're going to be talking about customer retention strategies that work and how to create barriers to switching. Joining us on the line from sunny Cape Town is Sean Temnett. Sean, you with us? Sean?
Yes, I am. Welcome, and hi, everybody.
Thanks for joining us. Now, Sean is styled as the CIO, the Chief Innovation Officer, at iCampus. iCampus offers strategy making and strategy implementation services. Sean is also a visiting lecturer at the University of North Carolina, and he is on the faculty of Duke Corporate Education. So, Sean, thanks for taking the time to be with us. We trust that the weather in Cape Town is a little better than what it is in Joburg at the moment.
It's glorious.
Glorious. I don't want to hear that. So, Sean, when we talk about the words customer retention, I think, you know, the first thing that comes to my mind is, well, we've worked really, really hard to get this client on board. The most important thing for me is to make sure that I reduce attrition and loss of customers, because we all know that it's far easier to keep a customer than to find a new one. But I mean, how does one go about reducing attrition in a customer base? Because there's just so many things that potentially result in a customer closing out on you. What are some of the things that you should be thinking about?
I wonder if there isn't a question before that.
Okay.
I'm wondering if all customers are created equal.
Ah, okay. So that's an interesting one. So are all customers created equal, and are they all worth retaining, I guess, is the question. So being able to tell who you want to keep and who you perhaps, and I know this might sound harsh, who don't want to keep, perhaps fire your customer, might be the choice of words there, is quite a critical question to be able to answer. And I think perhaps that is critical, you know, being able to, and we've spoken in previous shows about the concept of measuring lifetime customer value and understanding what a valuable client actually looks like. So that's a great linkage between, you know, saying, okay, so what is this, or what are customers potentially worth to me, and knowing who you actually want to retain, as opposed to just saying, well, I've got to keep all customers at all times at all costs, because that actually might be a costly mistake for your business.
For me, Richard, that's strategically exactly the set of trade-offs that I want our listeners and business people out there to consider, because you know, depending on how you define who the customers are that you want to retain, you're going to have to align your business and your business formula to be attractive to those people. And I think it's worth just thinking of a couple of examples of that, where, you know, as hard as you try and retain your customer, if you're trying to retain all your customers, you're going to make them possibly all equally unhappy. And I guess that's the starting point.
Yeah, well, that concept of all equally unhappy, I think the one thing that I'm always, and I always go to this when we start talking the words customer and customer service and retention and all the rest, is the beloved world of the call center, and frequently in the telecoms industry. And it just absolutely blows my mind that if I'm calling a cell phone provider from their cell phone, that they don't know that it's me calling, A, and B, more importantly, who I am and which customer segment I fall into. So if I'm one of their red VIP customers, you know who I'm talking about, Vodacom, and I'm calling your customer service center, please treat me as your red VIP customer would like to be treated, as opposed to the pay-as-you-go Vodacom customer, because unfortunately, I do spend a lot more per month with Vodacom than the average pay-as-you-go customer, and I do expect to be treated slightly differently.
Haven't you discovered, Richard, sorry to interrupt you, but haven't you discovered that it's not about customer experience so much anymore? It kind of feels to me it's around customer suspicion. Like when I phone any call center, I feel like I'm a suspect rather than a client that wants to be retained. I'm thinking of experiences across all service industries, hotels. They seem to be much more concerned about making sure that you're not going to rip off the hotel rather than giving you a terrific experience. And I think part of that's because our clients are not recognized. So in this day and age of big data and insights and all these smart robots and software packages and those sorts of things out there, I just don't feel like it's helping us to recognize. And hence, that was my first question, is are all customers created equal? And if they're not, then customer attention starts with working out for whom do you want to be special. And then once you've got that sorted out, then hopefully the path towards retaining them will become a little clearer.
Well, and I think that's so key. In fact, we are going to have a show further down the content calendar about the whole concept of data management and this whole concept of, let's call it, big data and customer data and how you keep it clean and the likes. Because that's something that I've been experiencing of late and talking to people of late in terms of just how do you make sure you know who you're talking to and that your data points are actually right and accurate. Now, the one thing that also kind of when it comes to customer retention, the concept of, let me call it, sell and then sell again, that choice of wording. You've sold to a customer, realize that you might have done a great job the first time around, but if you don't sell again with that same level of consistency, and it goes to what we've just been speaking about, that same consistency of experience and expectation, the customer feels a little disjointed in terms of what you're doing. So if you pitched me great first time around and I committed to you, now you want a contract renewal or you're rolling my services, I expect the same level of engagement. And I often think of this, your first pitch, the MD and all the players that move and shake get sent in to do the first pitch. But when it comes to the contract renewal in 2 years' time, or at best if you're lucky to get a phone call from your account manager, what's wrong with that picture, so to speak? What is your experience been in that resale?
Yes. One of my colleagues here on the iCampus team talks about building relationships with customers. I mean, isn't that critical? And it's beautifully simple in the way that she's approached this, to talk about relationships often being built on trust. I'm sure you, all of us out there, I think it resonates with everybody. You can't really have a relationship with somebody if they don't trust you. I don't know, would you agree with that?
No, absolutely.
So what you're describing there is, I think, a lack of reliability. So, one time the service is outstanding, in fact it's over the top, and the next time you can't even get the waiter's attention. So I think a good... I think trust, and my colleague uses something called the trust equation. It's a lovely simple thing, and I'll share it with you quickly if you like.
Yeah, go ahead.
So think about a numerator and a denominator, a simple formula where trust is equal to, in the numerator, something called credibility. Mm-hmm. And, this concept of credibility is quite a difficult one to get your head around. But if I give you an example in a moment, you'll see exactly what I mean. The example that springs to mind for me around credibility is financial advisors.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want you to paint, I want to paint a picture for you of a financial advisor that's been highly recommended to you, Richard. I mean, just think about somebody that you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then imagine they pull up at your home to give your family financial advice, and the guy pulls up in a clapped out old car, gets to the front door, knocks on the door, and there's a hole in the jersey. You get the picture.
Yeah.
Does that person have credibility?
And Sean, then my comment to you would be, then I take the advice from that financial advisor to heart, because he knows the concept of that a vehicle is a depreciating asset, and he knows how to sweat his jersey.
Yes.
Touché on that one. But yes, I get
you. Well trained.
I'm well trained. But yeah, no.
Many people, how you come across affects how people see you, whether you're credible or not. That's why Avis rent a car, smart uniforms, etc.
Correct.
Let's get past credibility. Okay?
Yes,
the next thing in the equation is R, which is reliability.
Mm-hmm.
And this is about delivering the same level of service on a consistent basis. If you're an airline, people want to know that 83.5% of the time you leave on time.
Yeah.
This is critical, that you're going to be open when people expect you to be open. The classic study in this regard are ATMs, automatic teller machines. I don't know if anybody still uses those, but back in the day, if you went to an ATM and it didn't have cash or it was out of order, you were unlikely to go back. And if it was out of order the second time you went back, people consciously avoided going back to those ATMs. So reliability in our world today is critical. And it's not good enough to, wow the customer once and not keep doing that. So you have to be reliable.
Mm-hmm.
And the third piece is a very interesting piece, because it leads to future opportunities to work on problems that you haven't even considered for your clients. And this is what I would call next level engagement with customers. And that's what we call intimacy. It's having that ability to have a conversation that is client-centered, where the client can indicate to you what the unmet needs of the client are. You see, there's nothing worse than people trying to sell you more of something you don't want or need.
Yeah.
And through intimacy with your clients, you get to discover what it is that they really want you to satisfy and what their real needs are. So that's the top line, Richard. It's credibility, it's reliability, and it's a level of intimacy with your customers.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the kicker for me. The denominator is, interestingly, according to my colleague, something called self-orientation. So if your business is only there to make money for itself, or if the person that is selling is only considering their targets, their commission, etc., I would say that's a high self-orientation. And therefore, everything you've done to develop credibility, reliability, intimacy is divided by this orientation around the self.
Mm.
And that, for me, is a very nice way of looking at business and business trust. Now, the objective, of course, of having trust and a trusted relationship is to build a relationship with your clients where you can go back to them, or they can come back to you, sometimes often with a requirement for which you don't even have a product or service. And Richard, that's what we call competitive frontier, is where you are solving problems that none of your competitors have discovered yet. I'm realizing that is one of the sources of true competitive advantages in businesses today.
Yeah, being able to answer the question that people are only formulating right now. Yeah, so true, true. Now, Sean, I mean, if I move on to the question of how do we create I struggle a little with this choice of wording, but it is wording that we use in the business world. We talk about creating barriers to customers switching from our goods and services. Mm. And for me, that sounds a little bit, I guess it's a little bit of a negative.
Sounds patriarchal.
Yeah, it sounds patriarchal, patronizing. Mm. It's like, oh, well, I'm going to create a barrier so you can't leave or you can't go elsewhere. But the reality is those things do exist. And I look at it and I go, sure. Okay, so how do you do this, and how can you make it a positive experience rather than a negative one.
Yeah,
and just as a matter of kind of as a starting point, I mean, if we look at the world of telecommunications, I mean, back in the day when cell phones were originally introduced into South Africa, you were on your network, your cell phone network, and you had your number. And if you wanted to go to another network, you had to actually ditch your number and go to a new number. Now, most of us at that point in our lives, if you had to ditch, I mean, I was quite an early adopter of cell phone technology, and I have never ever changed my number. If I had the number I had when I first got my cell phone, is still the number I use today. And anybody who's had my number anywhere in my entire work career, they can still get hold of me on that same number. And that's an important part of who I am now. It's become part of my identity. And so for me, not being able to switch without changing my number was quite a major barrier to me moving my cell phone provision from one provider to the other. Then comes along number portability, which everybody got as a function of competitor engagement at a legislative level, legislative force of, you know, all cell phone companies had to comply and number portability had to take place. And nowadays, if I chose to port my number to another provider, I could do exactly that and there would be no consequence to me. So the barrier to me switching suddenly disappeared through a legislative process. But I guess there are positive, let's call them positive barriers that could be raised by you as a business to make sure that people don't want to go elsewhere. I mean, the one that I always think of and is always so obvious is the whole principle of the learning curve associated with your product or service. If I know how this thing works, the ability for me to go and move to another competitor product is a lot lower because I've just gone through the whole learning process on your product. So, you know, having to go through that again, that's time and cost, etc. What are some of the other things that one could consider in terms of creating barriers to customer switching, and I want to try and focus on some more, let's call it, positive ones rather than just negative ones. What are some of the things that we could consider?
Well, we have what are called rewards or loyalty programs, which a lot of companies have embraced. And the idea there is to create a currency with multiple tiering, that it coexists alongside your relationship with that particular brand. The classic one, I think, probably one of the originators, was the South African Airways Voyager program. And I think that was a very successful program whereby it rewarded what we call frequent traveling. And of course, if you're in the airline industry, there's not a high degree of loyalty to different brands. One plane is probably similar to another. Of course, there's frequency and on-time departures and all of those sorts of things, but those are very difficult to communicate into your audience to make them aware of what they're getting in value. And so I think what the airline industry in particular did particularly well was create this alternative currency where you could rack up these points. And for me, I think one of the key learnings that I got from that was that as people approach the next tier, so there's an infinite jump in the level of loyalty that they display towards that brand. And I think that lesson has been forgotten because I look at all of these point schemes and, you know, I don't even know how many I belong to anymore, to be honest with you. I'm inundated with points here. But none of them graduate me from a gold to silver to bronze to platinum or whatever the tiering is. So that as I'm approaching the next level, gosh, there's no ways I'm going to fly another airline. I'm going to wait for this particular airline to become available to me. So I think for me that's a critical one is this recognition, this tiering process where you go from being a silver to a gold to a platinum. That's one for me.
And I guess that kind of goes in the same, let's call it box, with the whole concept of brand affinity, because your loyalty program and your brand go kind of hand in hand, in terms of, if you have a loyalty program but your brand is really being rubbished, 100%. The reality is you're probably not going to see benefits from it. I guess for me,
I think Nando's is a good example. If we've got some time,
yeah.
I'd love to just talk about, I think, how Nando's, as a truly South African but also now a successful international brand, how it builds fantastic loyalty amongst its customers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is a very good illustration as to what I would talk about in terms of retaining the right customer and building this brand equity with the client. Just as an aside, when I talk about or think about brand equity, I often think about forgiveness. How many of us haven't as a brand failed? And brands fail from time to time. And that's the nature of the services industry, I suppose. But do you want customers to forgive you and come back even after that negative experience? And I think Nando's does that particularly well. I think there's some good examples there.
Yeah. Now, I guess what you're referring to there is also the elements of the barrier that's created by risk reduction and trust. Because if I think of the Nando's brand, I mean, if I go into any country in the world, I mean, if I'm walking in the UK and I walk into a Nando's there, I know exactly what I'm going to get when I buy a Nando's product. And I think for me, that's about that reduce the risk of ending up with food that you don't like and trusting the brand because you know it's South African and you know what you're going to get.
That talks to reliability. So if you know that you're going to get a good quality, well-cooked, tasty, hot meal, and the order's going to be, and I'm going to be a little bit facetious here, but at least with Nando's, you know that the order's going to be largely correct. I have got home on a few occasions, and when you unpack the bag, something's not there, or there's something that you didn't order.
Yeah.
But then again, that forgiveness kicks in.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
You tend not to go back. It's not that you don't ever go back. You do go back knowing that, even if the brand doesn't always live up to its promise, you still have that equity. They still built that equity with you.
Yeah.
You know, Nando's works very hard at that. If you just look at a Nando's outlet, what it costs to put that outlet together, what we call the brand physical properties, it exudes professionalism, that exudes what we talked about earlier in the trust equation as being, this reminder that you are credible, I sense. But the other thing about Nando's is that it has a personality. Now, again, relationships, if you think about even motor cars, motor cars over the years have all tried to create some sort of resonance with their customers that lock you in. The classic one is the VW. It's the people's car, it's for everybody. It doesn't exclude people. So it's quite attractive from that point of view. And so brands that attach to a personal feeling or value are often brands that tend to just become more attractive to human beings. And the personality for me of Nando's is all around family. It's Portuguese. It's a little bit spicy. In fact, if you think of the personality of the brand, it's always poking fun. It's always having a laugh. It's kind of hot and spicy in that regard. And its culture is this sort of Portuguese culture, which is very open and food oriented. And I think if you take all of those things together, they do that consistently well. And again, they're easy to have a relationship because they are likable as a brand. So I think brand does play a role.
So then, Sean, just in wrapping up, I guess the other thing that makes a very effective barrier is this whole question of personalizing what you do for your customer. And I mean, we could probably spend an hour talking about personalization, but for me, getting that right is key to longevity with a customer base.
For sure.
Okay.
I think in the world of machines today, I mean, definitely there's no excuse for applications that aren't learning about their customers all the time. you know, if I think of banking on the internet, you know, banks should be able to pick up who your most commonly paid beneficiaries are. It should be a system that is continually learning. I think that's what customers are looking for in a relationship. Is it a learning relationship? Yeah. And, you know, I'm always open to being surprised by how our brands can do that well. Richard, if I could just quickly also talk about when brands fail, how they recover is also very important.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think customers are unreasonable. We know that mistakes happen, but getting an over-recovery from your provider, for me, is essential. And I don't think our brands in South Africa do that particularly well. If you mess up, guys, over-recover. You know, don't say to the client, listen, I don't know, we'll replace whatever it was that was damaged. You need to go beyond that. You know, have it personally delivered to the customer, something along those lines.
Yeah, just make that almost make recovery in terms of a complaint actually a great experience for the customer. Well, Sean, thank you very much for your time. We really do appreciate your insights. That was Sean Tennant from iCampus. Next up, we get a little bit more practical with our SME development conversation. Stay with us. CliffCentral.com.